Praise the Lord, everybody. You may be seated. There is truly something that God has put on my heart in the last little while that I want to share with you tonight. If you would, I'd like for you to go to 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 11. Just wait right there with me for just a minute, if you would. When you get there, shout amen. Amen. You know, I thought a lot about this, and there is some things in here that absolutely will change your life, your way of thinking, what you consider to be important, what you don't consider to be important, what you're willing to sacrifice. Wait right there for me for just a second, if you would. I'm going to go back to the very beginning of this story, all the way back in the book of Joshua, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about an oath that Israel made with the Gibeonite people. See, Israel made an oath when Jericho was destroyed. The Gibeonite people, they got wind of what Israel had done to Jericho and how they brought down Jericho with just a shout. So your shout's not important. Your shout is very important. Your shout is very important. It calls down the vengeance of the Lord in some situations. It also calls down, Sister Melissa, the blessings of the Lord in some situations. But the Israelite people, they were kind of juked a little bit, for lack of better words. The Gibeonites came to them and they said, "Hey, we're from abroad. We've heard what you've done to Jericho and Ai. We want to make sure that that doesn't happen to our people. So we want you to understand we want to be servants to you and we want to bow to you. We want to help you in any way we can." And see, what happened is, as the story goes on, Saul being king, he disobeyed God. God told him to leave the Gibeonite people alone. Saul went in and tried to destroy them. And you think it's not important, the things that you make a decision in your life, that you think it only affects you. It does not only affect you. I hate to break your hearts. Every decision you make affects the group of people that you're sitting with right now. Every decision you make affects the group of people that are in your family. Every decision you make on your job affects the people that you work with in some way, shape, or form. So every decision that you think about should be considered very seriously. You don't ever want to make a decision out of haste. You never want to make a decision out of anger. You should always make a decision after considering prayer first. And, you know, sometimes we don't do that. Sometimes we don't do that, and when we don't do that, we end up bringing down the cursings of God on not only ourselves, but we bring it down on the people around us. I want to read you a couple of scriptures here before I bounce into 2 Samuel. It says, "And when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and to Ai, they worked wily, and went and made as if they were an ambassador from a far country, took old sacks and put on their horses and their asses, and wine bottles, and old and rent tents, and bound up, and old shoes and clotted upon their feet, and old garments upon them. And all the bread of their provisions was dry and moldy." See, they went in because they knew that if they didn't do something, the children of Israel would get them. That's what they were doing at the time. They were going around and they were conquering nations that stood against God. But yet today, if you speak out against something that's not godly, you're a tyrant, or you're prejudiced, or you're some kind of lunatic that's a crazy, crazy Jesus-worshipping freak. All because you stand up against something that's not of God. But, you know, there is a way of doing that without falling into the categories of people seeing you that way. And it's all about how you present yourself. It's all about how that you direct yourself when you go and talk to those folks. Are you going, you offer up your advice? How many people know advice sometimes should be kept to ourselves? Sometimes our advice doesn't really mean much. It can be bought for a penny and sold for half a cent. So you better make sure that the advice you are giving is what God has given you to give to those folks. Because if not, you're going to run somebody away from the most important thing in their life that they need, and that is a place of worship that they can come in and find peace in their most strenuous times. See, I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have a group of people that I worship with in some of the tests and trials in my life, Sister Serena. I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have them by my side. I promise you I wouldn't be standing here right now. I can almost guarantee you that assuredly. But because of the prayers and because of the obedience, and yes, sometimes because of some of the harshness that people spoke to me, it caused me to be a different individual. I don't know how many of you could take a man coming to you and saying, if you don't straighten up, you're going to bust the gates of hell wide open. I've had that said to me. And it was said by a man that I respected greatly. And you know what else? It was accepted because what I was doing was wrong, and he was absolutely right in what he was saying. I could have rejected that. I could have said, no, that's not so. You don't got no right to judge me. Who are you to judge me? Look what you did in your life. But I didn't. I said, yes, sir, and I'll do my best to straighten up. You know, and Saul had went against the will of God and done this great thing against the Gibeonite people. And as you come into the 2 Samuel, I want to read you a little bit of something in the background of the story. See, there was a famine going on in the land for 3 years. 3 years. Now, King David, I consider King David to be a very smart man, Brother Basil. I don't know how he could allow a famine to happen in his land. That's because he didn't, but God did. God had a plan. God was going to show David yet again one more important lesson in life. He was going to show him that what decisions you make, David, affects Israel now. What Saul did, David, it affected Israel from then until now. You know, whatever I do as a dad, if I stand up and act like a total idiot in front of my kids, guess what? My kids are going to stand up and act like idiots. If I mislead them and tell them that church isn't important, guess what? Church isn't going to be important. You know, the bad part about that is if I do that in front of one of your children, it's showing them the same example. See, it takes all of us to make sure that our children of today is safe because they are facing some of the most trying times ever in history. What was wrong is now right, and what was right is now considered to be demonic. People look at us like we're possessed people, and we are. We're God-possessed people. We don't believe in things that are foolishness in the world. We don't accept the foolishness of the world, and therefore we separate from some of those things in our life. And, you know, it's very important to be able to separate without offending. Hope you caught what I said to you. It's very important to be able to separate without offending. Say if, I'm going to use Brother Chris for an example. Hope you don't mind. If Brother Chris does something that I don't agree with, and I step back and let Brother Chris do that thing, that's me separating myself. And when Brother Chris comes and says, Brother Carl, why didn't you go with me? Why didn't you do this? I'm going to say, well, I didn't necessarily agree with what you were doing. See, I didn't offend Brother Chris. I'm just telling him I just necessarily didn't agree with what he was doing. But if I say, you were dead wrong, you should have never did that, and you're going to rot in hell for it, what do you think is going to happen then? There's going to be a great division between Brother Chris and me. See, that's the way this thing works. This presentation thing that we present unto the sinning population, and believe me, there is a lot of sinners out there right now that are starving for something. They need something to know that they're going to get a better chance at life. And if we don't witness to them and we don't live a life before them as presenting God to them, then guess what? We're presenting not God to them. You know, there's no saying in this world, a decision that's not made is a decision. If you don't make the decision, guess what? You made the decision not to make the decision. So when things happen, it falls back on your feet or at your feet. You're the one that's held accountable, not the people around you. See, now, that's not true in this story that I'm telling you. Saul went against what God said. David now has a famine in the kingdom of Israel and can't figure out why. And he's going, Lord, he's seeking the Lord. I know David was probably on his knees pretty much daily saying, Lord, what is going on? Everybody around us seems, Brother Paul, everybody around us seems to be getting blessed. Why are the children of Israel? Is it something we did? I can just see David right now praying to God saying, Lord, show me the man or the woman that's causing this famine in my land, and I promise you I will behead them or do away with them to break this curse. This man was already gone. There was no going back and taking vengeance for the Lord's sake in a situation like this. Saul and Jonathan, and I'll read it to you right quick, in the 11th verse, 21st chapter, it says, and David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan, his son, from the men of Jebedesh-Gibeah, I think that's how you say that, which had stolen them from the streets of Bethshan, where the Philistines had hanged them when the Philistines had slain Saul at Gibeah. And he brought up from thence the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan, his son, and they gathered the bones of them that were hanged. See, the part that you're not catching in this is back a little bit further in this chapter. When David finally was told by God, hey, this isn't because of something you did. This is something that Saul did. You're just the recipient of what Saul's disobedience brought a cursing to you. Think about that, folks. This ain't no shouting message. This is a message that I'm trying to get next to your heart. I want you to think about the things that you do. Think about the things that you say. Think about the way that you react in situations that arise. A true child of God, when somebody makes them mad, won't blow up and start getting in their face and hollering and screaming. A true child of God will turn around and walk away and say, you know what, I'm going to go home and pray for my enemy because that's exactly what God told me to do. That's what a true child of God would do. Now, let's just be real with each other and down to earth each other. That's a lot easier said than done. As humans, the first thing we want to do is we want to retaliate. So David had to go back and go, okay, to the Gibeonite people, say, hey, I was praying to the Lord the other day, and he told me this is what happened. How do I make it right with you? How do I square this away? My people are suffering. My people are dying. There's a famine in my land. How do I make this right? How do I get this broken? And they said, we want the souls of 8 people that belong to Saul's house, that we can hang them in the streets and make public examples of them. Man, how would you like that? You know there's a curse that's been passed down because of the former leader. You go back and ask what you got to do to make it right. These people tell you they need 8 souls that belong to Saul's camp. We want to hang them. We want to make examples of them. We want to show them what they did, show people what they did to us, and this is what they get when they do this to us. Could you imagine what David had to go back to and sit down in his chamber and go, my Lord, how do I give 7 or 8 people up to save thousands? That's not an easy thing to do. That's not an easy thing to do. When God says give up these 8 people, David is faced with a very serious decision. Do I or don't I? See, there wasn't no way of not making the decision. If you don't make the decision, your people continue to suffer. You do make the decision, 7 or 8 people is going to die because of the decisions you got to make. See, we can't take people out now and sacrifice them. That's completely absurd to think that I could take 8 people because of something that my dad did, and my dad would be passed away and gone, and go back to the person they wronged and say, hey, what does it take to make this right so that we can get along? So what we do now is we lay down sin. When God asks us to do something, we lay down sin. And yes, sometimes our sin is brought out in the open. And you know what? There's no defending sin. There's no defending it. You can try and justify it all you want, but sin is sin. A liar is a liar is a liar is a liar. A backstabber is a backstabber is a backstabber is a backstabber. That definition doesn't change no matter how many times you say those words. A quick-witted tongue A foul mouth is a foul mouth is a foul mouth. No matter how many times you say it, that mouth don't get clean. Sometimes you got to stop and think about what you're saying, and you got to realize that you are the problem. My son can't sacrifice for me. I can't sacrifice for my son. That's something that he has to do on his own. That's something that we have to do. This is what it means when it says this is a one-on-one walk. Live your own soul salvation with fear and trembling. Not a fear of, oh, my God, God's going to strike somebody in my family dead. God's going to bring cursing my way if I don't do this. It's a reference fear. It's a fear that, you know what, I don't want to do anything to embarrass my father. I don't want to do anything to bring my father to an open shame. And I definitely don't want to do anything to bring my mother to an open shame. And you know what that mother represents? Our church. Our church. We have a man that leads us. And to this point in my life, he's never led me wrong. So it's my job to help him defend this place. That's my job to help him defend this place. I'm not saying defend this place. I'm saying defend this place by the way that I live my life, that Pastor John don't have to call me in the office every other week and say, hey, we done had this discussion once. If you do this again, I'm going to set you down. That's not the way this works. Because God sets kings up and takes kings down. See, Pastor John don't have to worry about taking you down if you're judging yourself. And Paul said, I judge myself daily. If you're judging yourself daily, you don't have to worry about the things that what Pastor John's thinking. Because if Pastor John isn't busy thinking about what Brother Carl's doing out here stirring up all kinds of stink, then he can move on and pray for something maybe that's in Brother Jason's life that Brother Jason needs. But if Pastor John's too busy always trying to correct me or talk to me or something like that, those curses have to be broke, folks. It's time for we, the people, to pull up our big girl, big boy pants and pull down our big girl skirts and live the life according to God. It's time for us to straighten up. That way we don't have to worry about somebody offending us in the church. Because if you offend in the church, then go to your knees in the church and pray for the thing, and the thing will go away. You know, there's something I've learned one time in my life, and it was a hard lesson for me to learn. Very hard lesson for me to learn. If I get offended and I go around and I just keep beating the gums about talking about, Brother Bry brought that to my attention, just so you know, I'm going to lighten up on you just for a second. Brother Bry told me the other day, he said, man, you're always beating your gums. I said, yeah, I do like to talk a lot, don't I? He goes, yeah, you do. But, you know, if I go around and I talk about what's going on in the church and I'm beating my gums instead of burning my knees, I'm as big a part of the problem as the problem itself. So many times we don't look at it like that. So many times we think it's okay. We can talk about it. There's issues. That's not true. The only time we should be talking about those things is when we're on our knees, just like David. See, David knew there was a famine in the land. David didn't know how to get it under control. He didn't know what to do with it. He probably, no doubt, talked to everybody, went around to every farmer he was trying to get a hold of, saying, hey, man, can you plant a crop here? Hey, can you do this for us? Can you do that for us? And he's running all over the place trying to solve the issues without going to the main man. And then David realized, hey, I can't do this. I can't correct this famine in my life. You can't correct the famines in your lives. And you can trust me, you got some people sitting in here that's got some famines in their lives. And you can't correct them. The only thing you're going to do is continue to starve if you don't go to the one that's got the answer. You got to go to God and let God show you what you're doing wrong, and then you got to correct what you're doing wrong, which is the hardest part of that equation. Because as a man, the last thing I want to be told is I'm doing something wrong. I don't want to be told that from my dad. I don't want to be told that from my pastor. And I darn sure don't want to be told that from God. Because when God says that, it's a little different than my dad or my pastor. When God says it, it's great authority speaking in my life. If you truly call yourself a child of the King, when the King talks to you, you listen. You make that difference, no matter what that difference is, no matter how hard that sin is to put down in your life. This is the problem. We continually go back to digging up the old bones that we buried because we think God can't take care of it. We continually go back and we continually rehash the old problem when the old problem should have been prayed about, done away with, and forgotten and moved on. This is what Brother David had to do. He had to go back and get the bones of Jonathan and all those people and bring them back and bury them to get the famine released off of the land of Israel. so many times. I'm going to say this at a risk of sounding a little bit harsh. How many times do you come to the altar and pray for the same situation in your life when you ain't willing to lay down what God told you to get rid of? I'm going to go lay this at God's feet, Sister Melissa. I'm not going to pick this up no more. And get up and walk out here, and then with 2 days, you're back to doing that same thing you just laid down at the altar of God, said you wasn't going to do it no more. Those bones are supposed to be buried. That's what this represents up here, is the getting the bones and burying them, the bones being the things and the sins of the world that we shouldn't be a part of, and we know we shouldn't be a part of. You know, it's kind of like this. I've learned my job very well now. I don't need my boss standing on my shoulder every 15 minutes telling me how to do my job. As a matter of fact, she told me the other day, she said, you're ahead of the scale for somebody that came into this position with no training. You think about it, folks. We came into this situation with all kinds of training. We grew up in Sunday school. We grew up with people around us being great examples of godliness and holiness. And yes, some people that weren't. Some people that weren't great examples. I've seen ministers get in the pulpit, preach the word of God, and go out and get in a fight with somebody in the street. So-called ministers. Let's put it that way. If you examine something and something doesn't feel right, stay away from it. Stay away from it. I knew a guy, know of a guy that used to move cars for a living. Hundreds of cars he's put on the back of his tow truck and pulled them all over the place, delivered them here, delivered them there. And one day he was in a rush, climbed underneath of a car, didn't have any safety measures in tow. The car came loose off of the back of the tow truck and fell down and crushed him and killed him. And that's just like us. So many times we think we can face the enemy unprepared. We don't have those safeguards, okay? We don't have those safeguards, and you folks are our safeguard. We are each other's safeguard. Because I'll tell you right now, when God says, wakes you up in the middle of the night and says, pray for Brother Basil, you better get up and pray for Brother Basil. If God wakes up Brother Levi and says, get up and pray for Brother Carl, Brother Levi better get up out of bed and pray for Brother Carl. Because guess what? If he don't, the next time it might be Brother Levi's needing that prayer, and somebody's going to go, he's all right till tomorrow. Well, tomorrow may be too late. You know, it's said many, many times in here that we're living in the last days. And I know some people like to hear that. Some people don't like to hear that. It's really irrelevant what we like or don't like to hear, because we are living in the last days. We are facing things right now that we cannot conquer on our own. We are facing demonic spirits that are sitting right in the churches. They have no fear. They have no fear. They'll walk right in the church and sit down with you because there ain't no power in the pulpit and no power in the pews anymore. And they'll come right in and they'll sit right down in the mix of it and go, yeah, there's supposed to be power in here. We better be bringing some power with us. We better be doing some fasting and praying. We better be doing some fasting and praying for people that we know and people that we don't know. Because there's going to be souls that are going to walk through that door in the next few months and we don't have no idea who they are. They might be friend or they might be foe. You never know. And if you aren't like Brother David here and praying all the time, saying, hey, God, shield the people of Israel, protect the children of Israel, guard the children of Israel, and God, for whatever it might be, show me how to lead these people. I promise you there's probably not a night that man lays down that he doesn't pray and say, God, show me how to lead these people. God, show me how to lead these people. God, show me how to lead these people. And then the tears begin to flow because names starts popping into his head. You know how I know that? Because it happens to me too. And I'm sure if you were honest, it happens to you. So many times we'll say, Lord, show us how to help so-and-so out of this situation. Give me the words to encourage this person to move on. Lord, give me the words, Lord. Give me the thoughts. Help me, Lord Jesus, to be an example to them that helps them to prosper. Lord, help me to help them. Help me to help them. I like the story because a couple of reasons, to be honest with you. Number one was David had to fix something that he didn't break. David had nothing to do with what Saul did. But because David assumed the role of the king, it became his problem. See, there's like this. My children, they didn't ask to be brought into this world. Kim and I made a decision to bring them into this world. So I have to do what I can do to protect them and guide them. And, you know, making the transition, I often tell Levi this. When you were a child, I could whoop your backside. I could instruct you. I could make you mine. But now that you're your own man and you've got your own way of doing things, now I have to encourage you to do those things. No longer can I smack it into you. Now I got to encourage it into you. And if I'm not encouraging myself, how am I going to be an encouragement to Brother Levi? If I'm not an encouragement to the church, how's the church going to be an encouragement to me? If I'm not an encouragement to the pastor, why should the pastor continue to worry about leading the people that don't want to hear what he's got to say? It's not really rocket science, folks. It really isn't. It's a matter of how much do you want to sacrifice for a group of people you love. I'm just going to be blunt and honest with you. It's crazy to walk into a church full of people and them say, I love you, I love you, I love you, and they don't have your back no more than walking out the door. That's crazy. I'm not saying it happens here, but I've seen it happen to churches in the past. I've been a part of churches like that. I was that guy. Walk in, tell you I love you, shake your hand, hug your neck, and walk out here and your name wouldn't even pop into my prayer at night. That wasn't love. That was just a stupid idiot talking dumb stuff that didn't know what he was really doing. Sorry, that's point blank and blunt. That's me. That was just me being stupid on that part. How did I expect anybody to change if I didn't take them to the Lord in prayer? How do you expect anybody to get better if you don't fast a meal for them? You know, if you want to see somebody's life changed, you don't have to go up and say, Pastor John, I'm praying for you, sir. I'm fasting for you. I hope you understand that I got your back and I'm fasting. I'm praying. I don't have to tell Pastor John that. Pastor John should already know that. Pastor John should already know that Brother Carl's fasting and praying for him, and that way you don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. As the musicians come, I know it was short and sweet, not typical for me, but usually I'm pretty long-winded. I like to beat my gums, as Brother Bry says. You know, I love that man to death. I ain't going to lie to you. If I could have 1,000 Brys around me, I'd be a happy man. He's just that kind of guy. You know, he's a good addition to my family. I could have never dreamed in a million years that my daughter would have found a man like that. I'll just be honest with you. As a matter of fact, I'm going to say this for lack of, well, Rainey's not here, so I'll be okay. I used to tell Rainey, you got to let your standards down a little bit. You got these way high standards. Rainey, I can't check all them boxes, and I'm your dad. And she's like, that's all right, God will take care of it. You know, she had faith. Brother Carl had doubt. But, you know, when God answers a prayer like that, it makes you want to go on. You know, when God heals a wife that had an 18% chance of living, it makes you want to go on. When you're in the basement of a church and you're watching your mom have a heart attack and you're trying to get her to stay too and not go to sleep because you know if she did, she'd never wake up, that's an act of God. When you're laying in the middle of 31 and you're begging a person not to let you die, and all I could do is say, God, it's in your hands, that's an act of God. You know, Pastor Biddle the other day brought up a bunch of examples of victory. Folks, we're full of victory. We're not defeated people. Jesus never lost a battle. He set out to win. He never, ever took a back seat to anybody, and he never got defeated. So why should we? Why should we allow the enemy to come in and destroy what God has put together? And I'm going to tell you something. God has put this place together. I told you earlier, God sets kings up and God takes kings down. Each and every one of you are a king and queen in here because God chose you. Each and every one of you in here have a purpose. That vision might get blurry once in a while, but don't never let it get dark. It might get a little fuzzy once in a while, but don't never let it go away. I've watched a lot of great men and women start off this walk, still going to church and not no closer to God than they were when they started. And that's sad. I was telling my mom near death, I don't want to be that guy no more. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy stuck between the ladder and not knowing whether to go up any farther. If the tests get a little bit harder, so be it. The victories get much greater. I don't want to be that guy that holds a group of people back. You know, there's oftentimes I walk through that door and I pray, God, if there's anything on my body, any sin that I've done today, forgive me, both willingly and unwillingly. Forgive me before I walk into the sanctuary, because this is the holiest of holy. Help me treat this as that. And when we get an opportunity to get up behind this sacred desk, man, this is the inner sanctuary. This should be treated with the utmost respect. To be able to bring some words that might change your life is the greatest honor any man can be given, or woman. Sunday school teachers back there in those rooms changing these young people's lives, that's the greatest honor you could possibly have. Treat it as such. I think that's our problem sometimes. We don't truly see how great it is. It's kind of like that new car syndrome. You get the new car, and after about 6 weeks or so, it's dusty and dirty. Go out, clean it tomorrow. Don't allow your salvation to be that way. Your salvation needs to be cleaned daily. Paul said, I die daily. Not that Paul. Great Paul. Brother Paul. Up in heaven. He said, I die daily. And that's what I think that we need to be. I'm going to do something a little different tonight. I don't normally do things like this, but I'm going to get out of my comfort zone a little bit. I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. I'm going to ask you to clear your head right quick. Forget about all the things going on around you outside this place. Because right now, you're in the holiest of holy. Right now, your prayer can be answered. Right now, your life can be changed. I'm going to ask you to think about one bone in your life, one sin. And don't tell me you don't have any, because I know you do. Every one of us has sinned and come short of the glory of God. There's something in some people's lives that are holding you back, that's keeping you from becoming closer and having a closer walk with God. Keeping you from becoming closer and having a closer walk with God. And I'm going to ask you, if you would, let that thought ring in your head. If you're able, I want you to come up to the front of the church. We're going to go to the Lord in prayer tonight as a church. And I'm going to ask you tonight, I want you to think about a visual of writing that bone down on a piece of paper, that sin, that one thing, because we all got one thing that keeps us from going on to the next step in our life. I'm not asking you to write out a big old long list of sins. I don't think most of you in here probably don't have a big long list of sin. But I know there's one thing that does. There's one thing that's stopping us from going forward. And I'm going to ask you tonight, when we get this way, I want everybody that's able to come up this way. And as we go to the Lord in prayer, I want you to think about it like this. I want you to think that you just wrote that thing down on a little bitty card, and I want you to spiritually wad it up and lay it at the altar tonight. And I'm going to pray with you that when we leave this place, whatever that might be, and it's probably going to be different for everybody concerned, when we walk out of here, don't remember it no more. Let it go. Let God have it. Let God have his way with it. Let's all go to prayer tonight. Thank you.
thought by now they'd fall. But you have never failed me.
I'm still in your hands. This is my confidence.
faithfulness. I'm still in your hands. This is my confidence. You never fail me. Your promise still stands. Great is your faithfulness, faithfulness. I'm still in your hands. This is my confidence. Never fail me. Yeah.